Recorded Books presents We Have Never Been Woke, The Cultural Contradictions of a New Elite by Musa Algarbi, narrated by the author. Introduction. Until 2016, I'd spent virtually my entire life in a smallish southern Arizona military town, about 40 minutes from the U.S.-Mexico border. I started my academic journey at Cochise Community College in Sierra Vista, Arizona. I attended college off and on, working full-time throughout, eventually earning a BA and an MA at my local land-grant university. However, I had a hard time finding good work in the town I grew up in. Ultimately, I ended up selling shoes at Dillard's. I was great at it, one of the top salespeople in the store. However, I was passed over for management because I was viewed as overqualified and unlikely to stay, and so I left. In 2016, some 13 years after graduating high school, I embarked on a PhD in sociology at Columbia University. My program offered a generous graduate stipend, more than I'd ever made doing full-time retail sales or management in Arizona. However, I was also supporting a family of four, and Manhattan is an expensive place to live. Consequently, I continued to work outside jobs while completing my PhD. Politically, I grew up during the height of neoliberalism. The Cold War ended when I was relatively young. America presided over a unipolar global order, and everything, from poverty to AIDS to war itself, seemed like it could be solved by the right mix of free markets and technocratic know-how. At the time, Sierra Vista and Arizona more broadly skewed decisively red. However, having come of age in the aftermath of 9/11 and the War on Terror, I ended up going another direction. I cast my first presidential vote for John Kerry in 2004, and not begrudgingly. It's humiliating to admit it in retrospect, but I believed in John Kerry. At the time, I subscribed to what you might call the banal liberal understanding of who is responsible for various social evils, those damn Republicans. If only folks in places like Podunk, Arizona could be more like the enlightened denizens of New York, I thought, what a beautiful country this could be. What a beautiful world. I'd already shed a lot of this in the years that followed, but the vestiges that remained got destroyed soon after I moved to the Upper West Side. One of the first things that stood out to me is that there is something like a racialized caste system here that everyone takes as natural. You have disposable servants who will clean your house, watch your kids, walk your dogs, deliver prepared meals to you. If you need something from the store, someone else can go shopping for you and drop the goods off at your place. People will show up outside your door to drive you wherever at the push of a button. It's mostly minorities and immigrants from particular racial and ethnic backgrounds who fill these roles, while people from other racial and ethnic backgrounds are the ones being served. The former earn peanuts for their work, the latter are well off, and this is basically taken for granted. It's just assumed that this is the normal way society operates. And yet, the way things are in places like New York City or Los Angeles, this is not how things are in many other parts of the country. For instance, in other American locales, the person buying a pair of shoes and the person selling them are likely to be the same race, white, and the socioeconomic gaps between the buyer and the seller are likely to be much smaller. Even the most sexist or bigoted rich white person in many other contexts wouldn't be able to exploit women and minorities at the same level the typical liberal professional in a city like Seattle, San Francisco, or Chicago does in their day-to-day lives. The infrastructure simply isn't there. Instead, progressive bastions associated with the knowledge economy are the places with well-oiled machines for casually exploiting and discarding the vulnerable, the desperate, and the disadvantaged. And it's largely democratic voting professionals who take advantage of them, even as they conspicuously lament inequality. If relocating to New York put me on the path to this book, the aftermath of the 2016 election radically accelerated my journey. A few months after I arrived at Columbia University, Donald Trump won the presidency. I did not find this surprising at all. I'd spent most of the election cycle, beginning in the primaries, begging anyone who would listen to take Trump's prospects seriously and respond accordingly. However, most of my peers in Manhattan went into election night confident that we were on the right side of history, and that the election would be a blowout. That is, of course, not what ended up happening. In the days that followed, many Columbia students claimed to be so traumatized by the electoral results that they couldn't do their tests or their homework. They needed time off, they insisted. There were a few things that were striking about these demands to me. First, these are students at an Ivy League university, overwhelmingly people from wealthy backgrounds. And even if they didn't come from wealth, they're likely to leave well-positioned. After all, Columbia is an elite school, i.e. a school designed to cultivate elites. And this is not a secret. Students choose to attend a school like Columbia instead of their local land-grant university precisely because they aspire to be more elite than most other college graduates who, as we will see, themselves tend to be far better off than the rest of the population. People from less advantaged backgrounds
Sample complete. Ready to continue?